Welcome to the official Leverage Redemption After Show,
a very distinctive podcast. I'm Felicia Michelle.
I'm Yael Teagle, and today we are talking the pyramid job.
Like Egyptian pyramids? Pyramid scheme?
It can mean so many things. Let's find out what it does mean when we head into the studio.
Don't you love an MLM? Don't you love an MLM?
Do I love an MLM? I don't know.
I love the takedown of an MLM.
I do. I do love that. I also love that this episode was directed by Noah Wiley. It very clearly has his flair on it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah. And we'll talk to him a little bit later in the show about this episode. But first, let's discuss our thoughts. You just said that this might be your favorite episode.
I did. I try not to say it on camera because then I end up saying that the next one is my favorite one. And I'm like, no, this is my favorite one.
I'm calling
it's
you
like,
out,
it's
though.
Like, no. It's like kids. You can't pick a favorite. It's wrong.
So why is this one your favorite?
This one is one that because they're all my favorites. It's one of my favorite kinds of stories because I like cults. Like, it's not that hard to fall into an MLM. It's not that hard to fall into a cult. It's a mindset. It's mental Olympics that they play with you. You know, this episode starts, you know, one of the first scenes we see is her wanting to make the right decision and quit and being basically peer pressured into staying and manipulated.
You know who needs to hear this? Is my favorite character in this episode. Ronald, who just now realizes that it's a pyramid.
So it's like a pyramid? Power to
reach out and spread. I never thought about it that way.
Real subtle, Brianna. I was like, I'm just going to give it to him. But it was better that she did it that way because had she just said it all at once,
right,
he would have denied all of that and he would have refuted all that instead of thinking for himself. She planted seeds.
It ties directly back into last season where we talked about confirmation bias.
Yes.
And so it's really nice to see that she had to be like a pyramid. And he was like, yeah.
He's like, yeah, it is, actually.
He was by far the best part of this episode.
He was innocent. And
yes.
He was one of the people that was under this terrible leadership.
Magic Baby.
Magic Baby.
Deborah and Richard Prosper.
Who buys baby clothes like that? I don't have kids, but I haven't met any independent baby clothes sellers.
I assume it is similar to a leggings brand that may have existed.
That might have happened.
Yeah.
But the important part about Ronald is that he ultimately figured out the thing that made him happy.
Yes.
And he was really good at it, too.
Yes. And then he was a jazz trumpeter. I love that. It was so fun. This episode was one of your favorites. I absolutely love this episode as well. I had such a fun time watching it because MLMs are dangerous and they are very thin lines between cult and scam.
Like that whole indoctrination of folks. Because he was like,
and my bracelet was $200.
They make you pay for those. Yikes.
Huh? I was like, you paid for that?
Yeah, that's how they get you. I want to talk a little bit about Deborah and Sophie and this head-to-head that we saw, because Deborah is the leader, and she knows exactly what she's doing and is so good that she sees through everything Sophie says. And that is terrifying.
It's terrifying. I'm glad because it kind of made her reveal truths that we learn more about Sophie this episode through that. But it's like, how do you can't con this person. Like, how do you, what do you do? But that just shows Sophie's very great at navigating her space. And also that she's probably had some self-reflection on these things. Maybe we didn't know as viewers, but her character might have been thinking about this the whole time. That's why it came to her immediately, because it had been on her mind or on her heart.
Right. So to see her have to navigate this, especially because she revealed truths, but not the truth. Although Debra is this evil, evil person, I'm sitting there going, this is none of your business. I never have to tell my boss, whether it's in any company or even in an MLM, I never have to tell my boss personal information like that.
It made me think, like, okay, then my mind went, does she use people's, obviously she uses their emotions or situations to manipulate them, but does she use it to exploit them? Or like, how? What does she do? Is that why she wants the secrets? You know, why do you want all these deep, dark secrets? Like, just let me sell the baby clothes. Like,
It ties into the Miranda story in that when you come to leave, now she knows stuff and she knows what buttons to push to keep you, right? So she knows the big reveal.
Yeah. It was a daughter, wasn't it?
That this might be out there. That moment, she can now use that. Yeah. I mean, had she not been arrested, she could now use that to manipulate Sophie to never be able to quit, to do the rebirth.
That is some bull. Because if let me tell you something. If that woman, if I had worked there, I know it said to me, you had to be rebirthed, which essentially means you have to start from scratch, mm-hmm. zero. You have no downline, which if you're in the MLM, your downline is how you make money.
Yep.
Ma'am. No, Miranda was pregnant though. She couldn't do anything. But I would have been like, are you serious? I probably would have lost it. I would have knocked all that stuff over. Like, not when I'm starting over again. Like, that's so much stress to somebody who already needs to leave because she can't afford it and she has a baby coming. Speaking of babies,
mm-hmm.
Parker, baby bump.
Yes.
Whoa. The visual was just like, whoa, in and of itself. Like, but the fact that she's like committed to like, probably in my head she like keeps it in her closet, and when she doesn't want to wear a purse or anything like that, she's like, she just wears this.
I mean, she's right. It's essentially, look, I know I've talked about this in my life many a times, women's clothing doesn't have pockets.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you have this baby bump made out of a bowl, you have a pocket. It's a pocket.
Yeah. Very bright. Hey, what happened to your stomach?
I do think her explanation makes sense. Right? Like, I think that the idea that, you know, they're trying or it's new or she's still early, that she's preparing to have to walk around to get spatially aware. I think it's a totally reasonable reason.
What about the bromcom?
Yes. The bromcom is really a delicious part of this episode. I think the moment where they tell Elliot that he's too intimidating is accurate.
Yeah.
So accurate. But then to see Harry have to do this was so great.
I mean, it's funny. I thought, here he is fighting again. This is not what he does at all. And, like, I wouldn't have expected that. And he was like, you want to know, what about something older? And he takes him to this room with all this army metal and all this stuff around. Like, are you like Vikings? Like, why is this this is what we're going to do? We're going to fight now? It was funny. And of course he loses his earpiece, which is hilarious.
That's my hearing aid. Too many years around loud engines, you know?
I'll say this. I appreciated how quick he was to be like, that's my hearing aid, you know, the car. I was like, yes.
Perfect.
Totally reasonable. The fact that he could then hear voices through it. I see how he
figured
it.
Did he say something like, you have to pay extra
you
for
have to
that?
Pay extra for that feature. I loved it. But I did appreciate what a like simple, easy, reasonable lie that was. And I feel like Harry, I know it's, I mean, again, it seems so obvious, but Harry, up until this maybe last episode, I think would not be able to come up with that.
Be quick on his feet with a lie like that. I was impressed by the physicality of the fight because he doesn't really fight. And he fought in season one. And we were like, whoa, that's not what you do. But you held your own. And and he fought this time and he held his own. And it was funny because when the axe or whatever worth his shield, I think that was where he had enough. Then he was like, oh, no, this is a real fight now. Yeah. Now I'm really mad. But that was funny. It's always funny to me. He did better in this fight. The last fight, I think he got his butt kicked a little bit, but this one, he won. I would say he won. I gave him the W.
I mean, I think the team won. The team always wins. I want to also, you know, we get this potential reveal about a potential daughter. But we also get Elliot talking to Billy the Gent, who is such a funny character.
Here, have you ever tried selling Russians a truckload of microwaves? They don't like hot food.
It's on the impression you weren't in the game anymore.
Does anyone ever really leave?
I guess two things really about Sophie this episode and her life, because Billy's Billy's there and bringing up the past again, because he's from her past, and then learning about this possible daughter, which is wild. It leaves more questions than answers.
Absolutely. I mean, Billy, speaking of wild, was part of the crew with Arthur Wilde. So to see Billy there and having Elliot really prying into Sophie's backstory and prying into her privacy was very interesting. And to learn from him basically what had happened and how Arthur and Billy got arrested and how they went to jail and she disappeared.
She got out of there. What was she going to do? Go to jail? At that time in life, no, she's out of there. She had to go.
Right. I really like the fact that Billy talks about how, like, he's not mad. He understands. Like, yeah, they caught me. I like that. I like a criminal who's like, well, I got caught.
Yeah, but I hear you're good now. I hear you're a good egg. So can you help me, you know, with this?
It's interesting because he actually says to Ellie, he says, like, she's a con woman. That's what she does. So I wasn't surprised. She lies to people. But yet you came to her and asked her for help. So do you trust her? Do you not trust her?
Are you to be trusted? Or are you not to be trusted? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why Elliot asked all those questions, because he's the type to kind of like leave it alone because he wants his stuff to be left alone, although it never is. even when he asks a million times, they're not going to ever let it go. So for him to be the person who's digging and asking the questions, it raises suspicion, because he would normally just kind of be like, okay, like what you say is cool. He's cool. You say he's cool, then he's cool. But nah, I don't really like this guy like that.
Yeah. Elliot is our protector. He protects all of us. And so he's got to dig when he needs to dig.
What's got you sneaking up on me?
Isn't sneaking. It's lurking. The big difference.
Interesting how our villains are this like couple, and they kind of gave me what's her name, they're like TV evangelists. They kind of like give that aura, like couple goals, like they have like a shared Instagram, and like everything is very much picturesque on the outside, but like the inside probably has some cracks. I would like to probably see a little bit more of their relationship, because I just don't know what the draw is, because they clearly have much different interests.
Yeah, honestly, I would have loved to have a scene of them just chatting, because like, what is that look? I don't believe that they're in love at all.
I think that they love what they've built together.
Right. I think they're business partners more than like
romantic partners.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
They're like, yeah, this life affords us this lifestyle. So we're going to keep living this life together, because it's the lifestyle that we want to live. Because all that stuff that he has, like that collection, first off, I said probably it was really illegal. You probably couldn't have most of that anyway. But I mean, probably millions of dollars for those things. Even though our Mr. Wilson kind of left with a piece of that.
Yeah.
Wait, now I'm thinking, wait a minute, Harry, where do you put that?
Great question. And we got to hear even more about how things went with this episode and how we got to where we were and what happened to that mustache from Noah Wiley. So check out our interview. We'll be back soon. I am sitting down with the director of The Pyramid Job, Noah Wiley. Hello.
Hello, hello.
Let's talk about this episode. This is the second one you directed this season. Was it more of a relief since you didn't also have to write it?
Yes and no. You know, the benefit of writing is that you write with a visual sort of picture in your mind, and then directing is very much sort of executing that vision. So you don't have to ask the writer continually what he meant, what he was going for, because it was you. Pyramid Job was just fun. I really liked the script. I really liked the world. I liked how much sort of added layers I could keep putting into scenes and on top of it. It was really fun. And I had a great guest cast. Got to cast a couple actors that I've worked with and known in the past. Chris Gorham and Virginia Williams came in and knocked it out of the park for us. And it was great.
Yeah. This one feels particularly, I think, approachable for any audience. Because sometimes, you know, there are things that might not be happening in your neighborhood or backyard. But pyramid schemes are everywhere.
Yeah.
And there are so many things. I felt like one of the characters in this being like, wait a second, that's a pyramid. Wait a second, this structure is pyramid-like.
Yeah, that was, well, you asked me on the last episode, did I put any directorial touches or Easter eggs in that I wanted to call special attention to? I put pyramids everywhere.
Yes.
I blocked actors in pyramid shape. Everything's on a triangle. I threw somebody, and I kept telling the props people. I kept telling the art department, like, I want more triangles. I want more triangles. There's so many triangles in this.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's interesting because not just the triangles. Am I crazy, or did this episode look like the color palette was so different than any other episode?
Well, certainly in the... At the Magic Baby headquarters, we went with a very specific color palette of baby blue, pink, and yellow, the sort of baby color pastels, and that was reverberated in the costumes that everybody worked. You know, because an MLM is, you know, it runs very along the lines of being a cult in the psychology involved in getting people to participate. And we wanted that to be pervasive so that, you know, the environment that you're in reinforces the dogma you're being preached to, which is being reinforced by the jewelry you wear and the clothing that you're wearing. And so that when you're in it, it's almost like being in a Vegas casino. It's totally consuming. And I shot it in a kind of a cool way. Everything inside the Magic Baby offices is shot handheld until the moment when Sophie takes the microphone and starts her spiel and takes over. Up until then, just stylistically, it has a very kind of different feel to the rest of the show and a lot of the other episodes we've done. It has a kind of an energy and a kind of anxiousness to it, which I thought was fun to play with.
Absolutely. It is very much felt from a viewer perspective, even without understanding what it is. You feel it.
It was one of those experiments I came to the table and I talked to Dave Connell and Gary Camp, our camera operator, about it. Like, you sure you want to do that, mate? Yeah, I want to try it. The whole time. Yeah, the whole time. I mean, not the whole time, but until a certain point. Even that shot. Yeah, that one too. Come on, guys. I think this is going to work.
Wow.
It was fun. It was a little gamble, but it paid off.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's the great thing about this show is it lends itself to experimentation in the way that you tell these stories. If you want to take a little bit of a risk and heighten the sense of tension by playing with the camera a little bit or playing with the music or playing with your transitions or your cuttings, it's a broad enough palette that it allows you to work with it. So it's fun to play.
Yeah. I want to discuss very specifically the man cave battle.
Oh, my God.
First of all, tell me about how this came to be and then tell me about shooting it.
Well, early on, I just love the incongruity of this being there being a Viking longhouse built into this nondescript office building as being this guy's sort of inner sanctum. And then, you know, once you start just planting those seeds with our art department, Randall Groves and Whit Vogel and his phenomenal team, they don't take that much encouragement to just suddenly bring you back something grander than you could possibly imagine. So they built this wonderful set. And Chris Gorham is a guy that I've known for a while, and we like to make each other laugh. We have very similar senses of humor. I just knew that he and I were going to have a ball playing together, and we got in that chamber, and it was just like, you know, they had to separate us. We were having too much fun that day.
I mean, it's clear you guys are having a great time.
Yeah.
And that fight was so silly.
Yeah. Well, you get... You know, you watch Leverage, you get action sequences that are Elliot Spencer driven. You're used to sharp choreography and really clean moves and really sort of efficient fighting. I wanted to see a fight scene between two slightly out of shape guys clubbing each other with medieval weaponry in an office building.
It reminds me of there's like videos of people being like, this is what a fight actually looks like, not what you hear on TV. Like there isn't punch sounds. A fight just looks like some people flailing.
Yeah. I remember saying, like, wow, so we're really doing this. And thinking that's a good motif line for this whole thing. Like, okay, lean into the... One of the characters thinks this is super weird that we're doing this. But okay.
Yeah, these two characters together, the bromance was
It's all about
so
the mustache.
Fun.
It's all about that mustache.
Oh, yeah?
I gave that mustache a lovely close-up at the end of the episode. I stuck it on the blender in the last scene.
Yeah.
We named that mustache. His name was... Oh, God. Bert Selleck.
Sounds incredibly accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. He did a great job.
Yes, the mustache was fin.
He may be back next season.
Oh.
Yeah.
I expect...
Could be a fan favorite.
I expect the mustache to just make cameos throughout the rest of the season.
Never know.
You never know. We also get Parker pregnant.
Yeah. Yeah. She, you know, she's a wonderful comedian and she's a physical comedian. So anytime you can give Parker a good prop to work with, and I, early on, you know, I'd say this bowl is a belly. This bowl could be a hump. This bowl could be a turtle shell. This bowl. And I just saw the wheels start to spin. And what you get back, you know, is phenomenal.
I mean, obviously, there's so much trust and playfulness and respect with this cast, but it seems very, very loose. And I know that when you first started directing on the show, you said that you had like an idea of what you wanted. Now you're like, here's kind of the concept. Are you still?
I came in loose on this one, and I came in with a plan, because you have to have a plan. We're shooting way too fast. And you need to have something that you know you can accomplish. But I really enjoyed not going to it if I didn't need it. And I enjoyed looking for the other thing that I hadn't thought of in my prep that was right there on the set in front of me. And, you know, so often when a door closes in your face, you lose an actor, you lose a location, a light goes out, there's a weather change. The immediate instinct is to go, oh, this is horrible. We're sunk. And I'm really trying to work on the discipline of seeing that as a factor that just opened up another possibility somewhere else. And if you can stay open to finding it, the work always gets elevated in that context. And it's gratifying as I mature as a director, you start to go like, okay, I'm able to both be practically organized, but also really facile and loose. And I think feels that's really cool.
So what happened on this episode that made you pivot?
A lot of that stuff on the Magic Baby floor, I hadn't really mapped out. And I was playing sort of beat to beat. You know, you think to yourself, I want the audience to be here. Now I want them to look over here. And now I want them to look over here. So as we're shooting that, I'm going to shoot subjective coverage to what it's going to look like when it's cut, as opposed to shooting all the conventional pieces and then cutting it to look like that. So it took a lot of stuff that we didn't need off the table, but it really required knowing exactly what I did want to have it look like at the outset, with a couple, you know, safety valves here and there. So it was sort of flying by the seat of my pants, but also watching what Gina was doing and saying, oh, that's really cool. I love that, in fact. But if you made two passes around her instead of one, that, you know, working in concert with the, everybody else and letting them feel like their ideas are not only valid, but better.
Wow.
I just heard a great line today that I think being a good director isn't so much having the best idea as being able to recognize the best idea. And if you can recognize the best idea and take your ego out of it and say, no, that's it, that's it. Sure, it's subjective to your taste, but it makes everybody feel much more involved.
Has there been any ideas that you were like, we'll try it, and then be like, that was a mistake?
Totally. Well, all I ask of any actor is try my idea first, and if you hate it and it doesn't work, then we'll do something else. And any idea that you have, I will give you the same courtesy. But we have to try as hard as we can when we try. You can't self-sabotage the idea or sabotage the idea. But yeah, you try stuff out and you go, it doesn't feel like it's supposed to. It's not working the way I want it to. Let's fix it. Let's figure that out. And that becomes a communal effort at that point.
I want to talk about in the pyramid job. This episode is a really amazing performance that you do with the confrontations with Deborah Prosper.
From the UK? Huh. I could swear I heard a touch of Boston in your accent.
Oh? Well, I have spent some time there.
And that's revealing the truth and really seeing Sophie step up her game, because she is on all the time in that.
What I really liked about that episode is that that character was such a brilliant reader of people. Like, she read Sophie, like, and she read her, and she read her, and she read her, and she read her. And what I love about that episode is that Sophie didn't retreat. You know, she didn't retreat and go, I'm out of my depth, or I don't want to go there, or I need to reconfigure this. You know, what's plan M? You know, she went, okay, I'll meet you there. I'll meet you. I'll use my vulnerability. I'll use my pain. This is how good I am. And this is how confident I am that I will take the most painful thing that's ever happened to me, and I will still take you down. And so that was... that was really, really fun.
So, Margie, the truth.
Let's talk about The Pyramid Job, which was directed by Noah. This one has our pyramid scheme, and I feel like this episode was just, in terms of visually, like, color, it just was so different than every other episode.
Noah had very, very strong... visual ideas for this. There was a point where I was doing a polish pass on the script, and he kept calling me saying, don't cut this one thing, because I intend on doing this with these pies. And I was like, really? We need the pies? Oh, no, the pies are going to be great. So he had a real vision for how he wanted to do the episode. And again, he found humor in such great places. I mean, this is a rather light episode for Elliot. But every scene with Elliot is so delicious. I mean, he just made sure that every Elliot scene was just a piece of candy.
Yeah. We also get this man cave, which is so specific. I mean, everything in this episode was very specific. Noah talked about putting triangles literally everywhere. But seeing this man cave, were there any practical issues that you were like, no, I know what you want to do, but that can't be done?
You know, the thing that we always balance is what we can afford to do, what we have time to do, but we never let it curtail our ambition. So we always try to not filter what we want, and then try every trick in the book to get it until we absolutely can't. So no, it was never thought of in those terms. But it was an interesting thing, because as we were working the script, we were really trying to figure out, what is this relationship that he's having with this guy? How is that working? And it was actually Chris Downey who gave the suggestion. He said, well, it's a rom-com. And we were like, what? He goes, it's a rom-com. It's a bromance. And then that kicked off the whole steps, and it gave a whole direction to the thing.
Yeah, I absolutely love that, because it really was a bromance. And it was, you could see it. I felt like I was watching one of those ridiculous Christmas movies.
But there's this great moment in it where he's fighting our bad guy. Mm-hmm. And for the first time since he's been on the show, he's not terrified of fighting. It's like, you could tell Elliot's taught him some stuff, and Parker has taught him some stuff. And he has this kind of cockiness while he's fighting him that we've never seen with him before. He still hurts his hand because he's not good at this
right
yet. But his confidence is completely different. And that's part of this evolution of Harry Wilson.
I love that. This episode also introduces Billy the Gent. And this is after we've met Arthur Wilde and Ralphie Roy and a mysterious mentor. People from Sophie's past are starting to trickle into the story.
Yeah.
Tell me about letting these people into our lives.
Well, you know, season one was really the redemption of Harry Wilson. Season two is somewhat Sophie's redemption. That early in the season, she's confronted with the fact that there's been collateral damage from the things she's done, and she hadn't really thought about it. And it kind of messes her up. You know, some of her instincts aren't as good as it used to be. You know, in the Elliot Father episode, She actually misreads someone, and she never misreads someone. And it's all from her dealing with this sense of guilt. So she needs to redeem herself, or at least for herself. And to do that, we have to bring back that time of her life and bring that world back. And it all comes colliding into our finale.
I know we barely got Hardest in the season, but luckily we got to talk to Aldous Hodge. So let's go chat with him about Leverage Redemption.
All right, so we see that the team is continuing to grow, that every day that they are redeeming themselves. So what is Hardison's most redeeming quality, and what do you suspect that he may be working on in his time away from the team?
Honestly, I think the thing he works on the most is probably facing his fear, especially being with Parker and her pushing him off buildings and, you know, shoving him through vents. I think he has to work on facing and challenging his fears, which is necessary for the job that he does. But as far as his most redeeming quality, I think it's believing in the good in people, being able to identify and see the good in people, just like with Harry, i.e. Noah, understanding where he was, and then Hardison having that discussion with him last season to sort of enlighten him to say, this is where you can be. You know, I think that he had an early understanding of what that was from the beginning, because I don't ever really see Hardison as having had a criminal past. I don't think he's a criminal. You know what I mean? He was a kid. He was 19, 18, 20, whatever. We met him in that early stage where he was just having fun. You know, I want to see if I can crack this, boom. But then he got into the nature of doing it for the best of intentions. So I think that he's always had a great heart. But I think what he does and why he's so good at what he does is because he truly does care about people. I think he truly does believe in the good, the better good. And then beyond that, the most important thing, like with Harry, is understanding regardless of where you're at, you have the potential to do good. You have the potential to grow and be better and be more. So for me, I think that his ability to see the best in people and help them realize the best within themselves is transformative. And it's necessary and needed in order to progress from where we are currently when it comes to the state of things in the world.
Does it feel differently to you working on season two compared to season one?
I would say the only difference that I feel is just progression with character growth and storyline. But I think the heart is still there. The nature of it is still there. The honesty is still what we know and love. And, you know, you're coming back for the same energy, that same feeling, but you know, we are pushing things forward a little bit when it comes to what the characters have grown into, what they've matured into, our relationships. But, you know, you still get that same family that you've been knowing for so many years. We all have a good time when it comes to knocking out lines and somebody messing up and us not figuring out where we are, trying to get back on track. Everybody takes shots. You know, Christian is Christian. He's funny as hell. But as far as geeks out, I mean, I think I still take the top spot in terms of being like Mr. Nerd. I mean, I say nerd with respect because I think nerds are dope. I actually am very proud to be a nerd. Shoot, we run the world. It's what we do. But still into my mechanics. I'm still into my computer stuff. It's the age of the geek. It really is. It's funny because Hardison in this season, the storyline is going out into space. And he's in the exosphere. I know all about that because I've been researching it, dipping into companies, looking at what to invest in, that deals in space travel, things like that. You know, I mean, I can tell you there's more platinum in space than there is on Earth. So probably mining up in space is the next tier. It's where people have been trying to go for a while. I can give you all the details. I'm a nerd.
Since you're in this space, Hardison is going to space. I know that you're a family man, so obviously family first. But if you had two open seats, besides your family, of course your family there, but two open seats to head off and blast off into the moon, which cast member would you take with you?
All right, my natural first thoughts are Elise and Beth. I would say Christian. I don't think he's trying to go up there. I don't think that's his bag. I think they would have the most fun exploring. Plus, I don't know, you know, Elise is my on-screen little sister. And to a degree in life, as my you know, fellow cast member, still my on-set little sister. So I'd like to show her a different side of the world, different experience that if she can catch that early and be able to appreciate that early in life. I mean, shoot, if I was her age and I had that opportunity, I would want that as well. So, you know, let me roll out. I don't know if people know, but her name, Brianna, comes from my real sister. In my real life, my little sister is 10 years younger than me. She's the same age as Elisa's character, but and her name is Brianna. Dean Devlin awesomely named the character. He talked to me about it. He's like, hey, what do you think about this? Named the character in honor of my little sister in real life. So I thought it was pretty great. You know, if Elise had the opportunity to get that sort of experience early, take that back and with her and, you know, do whatever with it she wants to do, I think that would be dope.
So it seems like to me, you and Elise are very much like brother and sister, like Hardison and Brianna. You have a kind of a family type of dynamic with you. Do you see yourself in Elise?
Absolutely. I absolutely do. So, you know, I was the youngest on the cast when we started. You know, I was the only little chocolate drop there. You know what I mean? So there's a different weight that you carry, especially when you're on a show as successful as Leverage. I don't know if people really understand it the same way, but I know the conversations the audience has with me when, you know, we're behind the scenes, when it's online, when people see me in the street, what it means to them. When I talk to young little black and brown kids who are into engineering heavy, you know, and they're like, finally, there's a representation of our truth. Somebody sees us in a positive way because this is what we really do. It's huge within our community. So I understand the weight that she carries. And not only that, she's carrying the female audience. She's carrying the LGBTQ plus audience. She has a whole different set of responsibilities that are apart from what I had to run with. So when you're managing that, it's not just playing a role on a TV show. You're talking about representing cultures, being a voice for different cultures, and being a beacon of hope to a degree. I don't want to sound like I'm on a pedestal, but that's the reality of it. When you run into people in the street and they say, hey, look, I was down, I was depressed, I was doing yada yada, but then I saw you and I realized I felt seen, so I felt like I could push forward a little bit. You know, so what she's going to go up against and what she has gone up against already, I've been up against in my own way. So we connect on that because sometimes the mantle is heavy and you got to carry yourself accordingly just so that you know what you're saying to the people and what you're saying about the people that you're representing.
There is still so much more cool stuff. Don't go anywhere. You're going to love this. Is there ever a time where you're reading a script and you're like, that's too complicated, we can't do something like that? How do we?
All the time. All the time.
And what do you do?
But, well, a lot of times we figure it out. We figure out a way to do it. We have to get creative. And then there's a couple times just based on, we had some challenges, you know, filming in a pandemic where there are certain scenes that are huge crowd scenes. We're like, you know what? We have to be safe. So maybe we can just change that location or just reduce the amount of people. There are certain times where you just have to talk with visual effects and with stunts. If there's a certain way we could shoot something. And then there are certain times where you might just need to ask the writers for a little bit of help. And, more times than not, they'll help you out a bit.
I mean, this family, it's been a family for years and it continues to be a family. And obviously that's everyone's part of this family.
Even my family's family worked on it. I had my daughter working in the wardrobe department. My son was working in the camera department. So it's real family. You know, they were raised on this show. In a flashback episode I did, my son also played Nate's son in the 70s in that episode where he comes up
to
the
car. The D.B. Cooper
job. Yeah, the D.B. Cooper job. Yeah, so that was a flashback episode I directed, and the little boy who comes up to the car and says, you know, they stole my bike again. That was my son.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So family.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Your son works in the camera department. Is your son going to be directing?
I don't know. He, you know, fortunately, he's at college in New Orleans, and it just worked out that his summer off, he was able to take part and work on the show and work with people that he's grown up with.
Oh, I have a question. I have a question. I have a question.
Okay, what's your question?
Well, my question isn't my question. It's all the fans' questions.
Oh, we should take the fans' questions and ask the cast.
Let's get the answers.
Someone wants to know, how did Elliot become such a good grifter? He's the best after Sophie. Gina, don't kill me.
Oh, that was close. You almost set yourself up for. I think Elliot is just, he's learned a lot. I'm going to go ahead and say it. He's learned a lot from Sophie. He saw what she was doing. He saw how quirky Parker is. He learned a lot from Nate. And I think he told himself, you know what, to get the con done, I think it's okay to make fun of yourself and step outside your box.
I think it's a stress reliever too. Like, I think that he's so serious and he's so protective and he's always the one that's like on guard. That actually, that's where he has fun. He lets himself have like a little fun. He lets himself be like loose in that way.
You know, I'm going to put it this way. It's like, this is what we do for a living. We are actors. We play other people. You know what I mean? Like Gina Bellman's playing Sophie. This is one of the only shows on TV where Gina Bellman playing Sophie gets to go play Gertrude. You know, and Christian Kane playing Elliot gets to go play Woody. We actually have a different hat when we sit on stage with it as an actor, but then we put another hat on and play an actor within an actor. The thing with Elliot is that when Elliot gets to go do a con and play somebody quirky, he doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders anymore. He doesn't have to think about how many people he's actually killed for money. And, you know, he's a hitman, and he was. And so when he puts on another hat on the show, he gets to be somebody playful and joyful and somebody that maybe he wants to be in another life, but he still has this burden that he has to carry for what he was in his younger life. And so I think that's where he became a grifter. So
I just remembered one of my favorite moments from last season, actually, and it was one with you and I, and I've always told you this. It's in the medieval episode when we walked out of the tent.
Yeah.
So we did the medieval episode and we had to like exit this tent together. And I had an outfit that was kind of similar to this with this big sleeve. And we did this bit of thing where I went like that in his face with it. And it was so fun. It cracked me up so much. I love doing it every time.
That's the stuff we love. I mean, that's the stuff
we love is like what I was saying earlier. Those teeny,
not scripted.
Tiny,
we just came up with it because, you know,
micro moments that just give us so much joy and hopefully, you know, give the audience joy as well.
Gina, fans want to know, what is it like for you now to be the true mastermind of the team?
Well, it feels like a massive burden a lot of the time. No, it's, you know, big shoes to fill. And I think, you know, part of the journey, Sophie's journey this year is that she has a little wobble in her confidence because it's a big responsibility. And I think in the past, she's only ever been responsible for herself. She's had that maternal side of her, like she's looked out for everybody, but I don't think she's ever felt responsible for them before.
Nope.
And I think this year, she realizes that she might have messed up in the past, that there are consequences to things she's done, there are consequences to the things that they do. And she has a bit of a wobble. But of course, that's always fun to play as a character because none of us ever want to get to the point where we're just like plateauing. We're all just so confident in what we do that there's a certain like, not arrogance, but like you're just being overconfident. Like we need to like mess up. We need to fall down. We need to pick each other up. I mean, that's the dynamic that we've worked so hard on for so many years. And we're so, so unbelievably proud. You know, we feel so lucky to be in this moment, but we never want to get to a point where we feel comfortable. Like, we just want to always feel challenged as actors and as characters and as humans, like, knowing each other so well. Like Christian was saying earlier, I want to see him be his best self. We want to see each other be our best selves, like, as actors and as characters. We all celebrate each other's like special skills and stuff. We did a scene a few episodes ago, and I think it was an episode that Beth was directing, and it was in the headquarters. And he had to do all this incredibly intricate stuff when you're on the boxing bag.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you have to, what was it, that the order, you're boxing, then you're
then taking
you're,
all then the taking wrap off, the things, off.
Then your phone rings.
Then the phone rings.
And that he has to do all this like brilliant, and he's absolutely brilliant with what we call business in the profession, which is having like lots of little activities. And he just banged it out every single time. And it was funny. It was great because we were all celebrating him. But everyone in the cast knows that I'm so horrible with props, and everyone in the cast knows it. And everyone's like, don't give Gina a cup of coffee in the scene, or don't give her an umbrella, or don't give her... Whereas, you know, he can do this and answer the phone and drink a coffee and throw a ball. And like, yeah, I guess it's the fighting. You're like a dancer.
Well, it is like, a dance. Yeah. It's really not a fight. It's always been a dance. It's just a numbers game. One, two, three, one, yeah. two, three. But the funny thing, when she's talking about this, the greatest thing about all of us, and I think this is why we've worked together so well for so long, is that nobody's jealous on this. I've been on other shows where people get really jealous. Man, when it's a person's time to shine, when it's her time to shine, we all step back and let her take the spotlight. And when it's my time and when it's Parker's time, we've been really good about that. Like, and not only step back and let you do it, we actually push you forward and lift you up. There's not a lot of cast. We're competitive for that.
We're competitive in a kind of jokey, healthy way, like to steal little moments from each other in a way that's going to kind of just give the scene some energy. Give it. We're all about, you know, there being a great energy in the scene and connecting with each other.
When it's focused on one of us, though, we really do. We take. You know, if there's a light pointed towards us, we give it all to that person and let them shine. And I think that's one of the secrets of success for Leverage.
Just like our crew, the fans of Leverage Redemption are so talented. So check out some of the fan art that we received this season.
The official Leverage Redemption After Show is part of the Electric Surge Network on Electric Now. We recommend checking out some of our other original content, like Inglourious Trexperts, and even more official after shows for Electric Entertainment properties.
Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms at After Leverage.
And don't miss us. We'll be back next week, as we're here every week. Next week, we are talking about the work study job. We are going to have more from co-creator and consulting producer John Rogers. We're going to have some chats with Elise Shannon. You're not going to want to miss a moment. Until next time, I'm Yael Teagle.
I'm Felicia Michelle. And this has been a very distinctive podcast.